Okay, are we on?
Yep.
Okay, it's Nancy.
Hello.
Steve.
And Mark.
And by telephone. By telephone, Lenore. And it's, the film is Brick. And the date is the 23rd of April, 2006.
And we're meeting in a cafe, so that's why.
There may be a little audio interference here. Okay.
It doesn't mean anything, but four people left the theater when I went to see it.
Oh.
Four people left the theater.
What theater did you see it in?
In the middle,
at the Embarcadero, in the middle of the film.
I saw somebody leave when I went home.
You too? Yeah, there were some few people left when I saw it too.
What was the promise of the film that they didn't feel it was meeting? I mean,
I don't know.
How was the film advertised? I mean, I didn't know anything about it other than the group chosen.
Well, I can understand that, you know, having film noir dialogue in it, presented by modern high school, could be, you know, like people, it's just like, just too weird. It's like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Romeo. It reminded me of that Romeo and Juliet remake in kind of.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio, where it was, you know, set in modern day, and only it was much more kind of stylized than this is. But still, I think people might have, you know, they couldn't have dealt with the fact that those two things could exist. I understand that, because it was kind of real, you know, but on the other hand, there's this dialogue that kind of like takes you back out of it.
You know, something with the dialogue happened to me as I was listening. It just didn't sound convincing. Because of the content or the language they were using, but the tone was reciting, I felt.
Well, I think that's what those movies were like. I think he took did old time movies like that and put it in a setting that is contemporary, and he tried to put both of them together. At first, when I first started watching this movie, I'm like, high school kids don't talk like this. But then as the movie goes on, to me, because it was so plot driven, I really got into the plot and I really got into what was happening and how he was investigating and everything and all these characters who came up during the movie. And so it engaged me more and more as the movie went on. Whereas I guess some people just couldn't get into the vibe of the movie and just decided to walk out or whatever. But at first you're very taken aback by the way they talk. You are.
Yeah. And I recommended against it for the people at my office who are non-native English speakers. I said, you're going to have a hard time with this film.
Yeah. Yep.
I had a hard time, Al. They were talking so fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it was, there were some lines that were not delivered well. I mean, not enunciated. So even the slower stuff, I missed some. And I wish, I was thinking, well, maybe I should see it twice just to see what I missed.
Okay, so that was the win. Say it again.
Oh, I do want to see it again. I'll definitely rent
it again.
Yeah.
He often sees films twice. I know you don't. You do some, but not as often as Mark.
But Mark,
I like it. I liked it so much. I will see it again.
I like it.
All right, let's talk about what you liked about it.
Well, one of the things I liked about it, after I first got over the juxtaposition, then I kind of got into the juxtaposition. Like, here's this film noir kind of plot, kind of dialogue, kind of relationships between characters, and yet it employs these high school kind of setting where, you know, they you know where I eat lunch.
Come and find me.
Something about the specs. What did he say?
The brainy guy?
He said to the brainy guy,
keep your specs on.
Right.
Like that.
Keep your specs on.
And there was that one scene in the vice principal's office that was just really, really, I'd really like that scene.
With Truman.
Yeah.
Vice Principal Truman. Yes, I
know.
Mom pouring orange juice and milk.
And leaving the room while they're having a meeting.
Yes.
think it was very intelligent. I mean, the proposition, the project of doing a film like this, I think is very interesting to use. Those tender, though not innocent, voices to do something like this at this level, at the level of Humphrey Bogart, people like that. I like that.
Yeah, and I could see, now, if it were really film noir from 35, 45 years ago, who would have played the female lead? Not the girl who dies, but the seductive,
femme fatale.
Was that Ingrid Bergman? Was that Ava Gardner? Was that,
you know, Barbara Stanwyck?
Maybe Barbara Stanwyck. She was kind of juicy. Anyway, now did everybody?
My name is Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver. Yeah.
Do you think it would have been more effective if he filmed it in black and white, or do you think it didn't matter? Seeing as the genre of the film.
I think it's more effective in color. Everything else is modern, you know, and to do it in black and white, it would have been too much like you're trying to take it back.
Where it was kind of 50-50 and was kind of too unbalanced.
When I compare this with that Romeo and Juliet thing, it's like, I don't think anybody had a problem with the Romeo and Juliet because Shakespeare has been done in a modern way on stage.
Many values of modern.
It was accepted because it's kind of like, oh, it's a classic. It's a classic, you know. But we don't think of film noir as classic, or we don't think that kind of dialogue is classic, and yet it is. There's something about it that's had its day and may not ever come again, but to bring it back is a worthy thing, especially in this kind of setting.
So what were you going to say, Lenore?
I just was agreeing. I think that one of the things that it does by putting it in a different setting like that is that it really highlights what a stylized genre it is. Very, very stylized. You know, the language, but also the plotting and the acting. You know, that's one of the things that struck me is just how stylized it is. Or manners, you could say.
I thought it was really interesting. The girl, the femme fatale, you know, recites that poem at her party. And did everybody get the poem? You know what it was? Come with all its rays. I can sing it, but I can't say it. It's from the Mikado, and it's what the lead female of the three little girls from School Are We. It's what she sings in the Mikado. So it's like, the sun with all its rays. Anyway, she didn't sing it. She just recited it. And I think a lot of people didn't get the classical reference, and if you didn't stay for the credits and see the music.
I did see that.
Yeah, did you read it? You didn't see where it was. You didn't know where it was. Okay. So that was like a play there, too, with, you were supposed to, it was supposed to be revealing of her character, but it wasn't quite. Mm-hmm. It was the character she wanted to be and not the character she was. And then, and she's wearing the Chinese outfit, and the other part is then it's artifice in another way, because the line right before that in the Mikado is her artless ways, and artful ways, where artful means both skillful and kind of crafty, right, deceitful, right. So it's all, you know, I happen to know the Mikado, it's one of the,
you know it well.
I know that one well, but I don't know all of them that well. You know, so that was I was in luck because I happened to know that song and that piece and that setting for it.
Good.
Well, that makes me think of the other the character, the actress who's always in the dressing room.
Oh yeah,
the black girl.
She has that really incredible Japanese makeup on.
Yeah,
the heavy white makeup with the red lip.
Yep.
And the eyes.
Yep, yep. Yes, so that was not, that was appropriately artful as well.
The scene where he first he goes to the phone booth first, his ex girlfriend hangs up, and then the car drives by, and a cigarette gets thrown out of it.
Right.
The shot of that was just so film noir.
Right.
And I appreciated the continual uses of that kind of camera work and that kind of editing. The shots in the print in the vice principal's office, always like angled up.
Right. Now and then now was it appropriately film noir the way he outsmarted the guy who was chasing him around
no,
the school?
That, wasn't,
that seemed
that
to
wasn't.
Be very much you know in the tradition of Steve McQueen or some chase
yes.
movie,
mm-hmm.
right?
No, yeah.
And the guy knocked himself out by getting tripped.
Did he get to take his shoes off for sound or for what? Why did he take his shoes off?
I mean, the sound was the obvious thing that you were hearing all during the chase.
And he pulls out his legs
and
trips him. That's how he trips him and kills him.
Well,
I don't think he was dead, but he was hurt pretty bad. He was knocked out.
That was very cleverly done, yes. And I like the flashbacks of our boy, too, from when he and the girl were keeping company, and he was all fresh-faced and his hair was nice, and then later on he got more and more haggard and exhausted and all that stuff.
There were some scenes that confused me a little. Why was he flashing back or seeing her in that alive in the tunnel, in front of the tunnel?
Because he had a dream.
It was a dream?
It was kind of him and
flashback to that dream he had. Remember, he had that dream of her coming out the tunnel on the black plastic flapping up?
Yeah. There was
but then they moved the body.
Well, he moved the body, but I think he was imagining her waiting in that place. It was like she was waiting there for him to save her. And in a sense, he ended up saving, you know, by revealing the killer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I took it. And it was his resolution of that symbol, that A, you know, the tunnel symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So he had the dream where the symbol was revealed to him as that tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was really fascinating how, I mean, I found it really gratifying how it was very stylized and all that and very, that's the best word I can use for it. But at the same time, it was in this very real, the things that they were going on in the high school, it's like, I think, it's kind of like drug dealing and violence and underground stuff and under the nose of the parents and all that stuff. That stuff's very, very real.
Well, yes, and. I was amazed.
Well, I mean, high school kids are getting all kinds of stuff, but I think most of the time we don't know or we ignore it or we don't, whatever. I mean, it's a very weird time of life, you know, where people are, fairly developmentally complete. They have all this hormone stuff going on, but they're young adults that are, like, doing stuff and dying and... It's a lot of stuff goes down.
Yes, it's true. A lot of stuff does go down. I was amazed that San Clemente High School allowed them to film all of it on the campus, given the nature of the story and the supposed involvement of high school kids in all this violence and drug running.
And he filmed it for under $500,000, I read somewhere. It took him about 6-7 years to get this film made.
Really?
Yeah. He wrote the script for this a long time ago.
The
financing and people in the film and the production and everything, they said it took him about 6-7 years before it finally got off the ground.
But it didn't take him 7 years to shoot
No.
This was all shot in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, if you only have that much money, you probably have to do it pretty quick.
Right.
the actors were really good.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. The lead actor, did you see Mysterious Skin?
No.
I saw that. What's that about?
He's the child molestation. He's one of the boys.
I couldn't remember where I had seen him. You saw that, Lenore.
It's called Mysterious Skin.
That's him. That's a hustler.
Yeah.
Who turns hustler.
Yep, he's the hustler. He's one of the kids who was molested.
Remember, you recommended that to me, remember?
Yeah, that was a great film.
I saw that to Roxy.
It was really good. Really like that movie.
Did you guys recognize who the head drug dealer was? Did you ever see him before?
Sure.
Was he like in E.T. or something?
No, he wasn't in E.T. He was in, like, Witness or something.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't he the
like
kid in Witness?
Here. Yeah.
It was Lucas Haas?
Yeah.
Luke Haas or whatever? Yeah.
Witness, yeah.
Yeah, the guy with the limp.
Yeah, he's turning into a pretty good actor. Yeah.
This young man who's the lead in this.
Like he was one of the kid in Third Rock from the Sun. I don't know if you've ever seen that sitcom. But when he
I saw
kid.
That. With this
John Lithgow.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the young boy in it.
Wow.
And I think he's making some pretty good film choices.
Yeah, he is.
He's very convincing.
Yeah.
He's pretty convincing in both films.
Oh, yeah, both of those films, he was really, really good.
Mysterious Skin.
Write that down.
Really, really intense film. Really, really good.
I believe everybody emotionally to a certain extent. I mean, except I think that the girl who played the actress was a little bit skewed to, one-dimensional. She was into constant betrayal and artifice, right? I mean, that was her character. That was her character, right?
She was very good. The scene I liked a lot when she throws herself at him by saying, "I saw the way you treated
Emily,
and you did this and you did that, and I don't know anybody who would do that for me." And then he turns and says, "You're dangerous."
Yeah.
You're dangerous.
There was one scene with the black actress at the end where she's confronted by
our hero,
and she starts to cry and does this scene, and then the boy who was servicing her leaves, and she just turns it off, and you realize that she's an actress.
Yeah.
She's an actress in real life. She's an actress.
Yeah.
She's in real life and she's acting.
I love all those little details, like that whole thing of her having that pet boy.
Her having a pet boy, right. The other business about that.
Also, there's that scene where the heroes, now he's walking in and out of that theater room and backstage and they're rehearsing. There's one point where he walks through there and there's a boy kind of grabbing a girl by the shoulders in the rehearsal, and he says, "Am I supposed to really kiss her now?"
Right. How did you feel about the basement room? How'd you feel about the basement room? The office.
The desk and a chair, and that's about it.
And the desk facing the wrong way.
It reminded me of Blue Velvet. You know, that the whole scene in that house, every scene in that house with the mother and the scene in the van with the lamp in the van, it just reminded me of...
The lamp in the van was hysterical.
Right.
That was good.
And the room and the house were so
tacky. California suburban.
It was stark, though. There was just nothing in there.
Well, not until only a room. I mean, a house.
Yeah.
Because there's the camera goes to the rug and then to the wallpaper and to all those things.
Right. Bad paneling.
Right.
Right. I'm trying to think of some of the other parts. Yes, I remember the phone booth. The other thing that what struck me about it is this film wouldn't be able to be made, won't be able to be made very much longer because all those phone booths are disappearing.
Right.
Everybody's got cell phones.
Except for me. And I'm always out looking for where's the phone booth?
But the phone booths are.
It's getting tougher.
It's getting tougher. That's right. They're taking out
phone booths. Will you be forced?
What?
Will you be forced to get a cell phone?
Yeah. But not because the phone booths are disappearing. Other reasons.
Well, because the expectation of being connected is there for your family and for the school and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm still going to fight it.
Okay. You don't have a cell phone?
Don't want
you
one.
You don't
either.
Have a cell phone?
Don't want one either.
Mr. Red TV? Either.
No cell phone.
Okay.
If Steve can do it, I can do it.
Okay.
It's easy.
Say no, right?
Yeah.
Just say no.
Just say no. Go for it.
It's one more. She's just saying no on her cell phone.
No, she's on her house phone.
Oh, no, she's on Nancy's cell phone.
She's on my cell phone.
Okay. Oh, but she's saying no to cell phone.
Right. It's certainly convenient for
you. You can have one.
Right. If you're really saying no to cell phones, Lenore, you wouldn't be calling me on my phone. But we won't talk about that.
Okay.
Anymore.
What more do we want to say about this? I mean, it was very Southern California, and I was sure glad it got revealed what town it was, because I was fighting to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was not L.A., and it was Orange County, but I couldn't get what town it was. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very interesting. But it was all made in San Clemente, which was amazing. I don't even know San Clemente, really, but there were certain things that were distinctive.
Did anybody see the last, but that Gus Van Sant film about high school?
Called Elephant? The Elephant, or Elephant?
Yeah, I never saw it. I heard it was very good. I'm just curious about this.
Didn't we have it as a film one?
Well, we were talking about seeing it with another film that was kind of like on the same subject.
Columbine.
I think we did see it, but I remember discussing it.
Yeah,
which
I think it,
Elephant.
It was sort of a takeoff on Columbine.
Yeah, right. It was.
Yeah.
But I didn't see that.
I missed it. I'll have to put it on my list.
I missed the meeting also, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think I've
got any comments in terms of any parallels or contrasts in terms of how they portray life for people in high school?
Well, the Gus Van Sant movie was just kind of showing the same thing over and over again from different angles.
Yeah.
Where he'd have, like, people walking down the hallway one way, peeping what the view from the hallway the other way, and things like that. So they're not too comparable to each other, really.
It was more about, like, the reportage of the event. It's a Rashomon-ish.
Yeah.
More, right? Right.
Yeah, well, just, like, probably what went on during that day,
I did see it. As we're talking about it, either I saw the preview about seven times or I actually saw the film. I can't remember.
Well, then he made that one with the Kurt Cobain kind of takeoff, but everybody panned that and said it was absolutely horrible. Gus Van Sant, what was it called? Last Days, I think it was called.
Oh, maybe I didn't see it.
Last Days. Did you see it?
No, I know somebody went to go see it and said it's like washing paint dry. They said absolutely nothing
what
goes
color?
On in the movie.
Washing paint dry. Washing paint
dry. You don't know this expression?
I do. I just didn't understand what he said.
What more do we want to say,
about
if anything,
Brick?
About Brick? So, the name was from the drugs, right?
Do you think he'll try to do it again? The filmmaker.
But this?
Do the same kind of genre of a film like this. Only different story, different setting.
Different genre?
What else? Where could you do it that wouldn't be as good as this? I mean, you couldn't. I don't think you could top this. I don't think you could top this.
Well, this was good.
Yeah, this was really good. I appreciate it because it was very different more than anything. somebody would go out and make a film like this. I think it's very young people oriented, which kind of like, why would they put a reference to the Mikado in this film? When I think, like, when I went to go see the film, everybody under there, when there was under 30.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, me too. Well, I saw it at Santana Row, so, you know, it wasn't very full, but there were people of all ages, and I went to a late show. I think I went to the 9 o'clock show, you know, on a weeknight. So
I would wonder how somebody who's never seen a film noir movie would think. You know,
I think those are the under the 30
crowd. that's what I'm saying, is that if you don't know where this style and dialogue is coming from, you can't appreciate the fact that it's there.
So I like the question you asked earlier, and I'm still thinking about it, about black and white versus color.
No.
Oh, Steve, sorry. And I do appreciate the black and white, and I think it might have done well with the black and white, or there could have been a version of it. I'm thinking of a film like... what was the one? Oh, now I've got to think of it. It was set in the 50s. It's not such an old film. We saw it, I think, for the group. And it was shot black and white. And it was about a small town in California. Are you remembering it? No. Yes, that's also film noir. This is a little older than that.
Was it film noir?
It was film noir,
right.
But it was modern. Say it again? Well, it was shot in a film noir style. It wasn't film noir.
The actor.
John Goodman was in it, and he gets shot because he's like the proprietor of the department store, and the woman the other guy.
The Coen brothers.
Yeah, maybe it's the Coen brothers.
No, I don't think so.
I think it is.
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob Thornton. Yes.
Was he in it?
He's the female lead. Oh, I can't remember. But it was like, what was the name of that movie?
It was a great movie, and
The Man Who Knew Too Much, or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember the shot of the attorney coming to see him in the black and white of the bars up against the
shadows,
the lighting. Yeah, it was very
contrasted.
Very heavy contrast, and then the speckled light of the picnic, the outside family Italian picnic, and she wasn't Italian, right?
I can't remember who the female lead was.
Who was
it?
She was blonde, right? It was Faye Dunaway, only modern. Anyway, that's a film that didn't have to be. It was shot by the Coen brothers about a time past film noir, slightly in the film noir style, but current. You know, I mean, relatively modern shooting. And so I was thinking about that as the contrast, where it worked great to be black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It was slightly historic, but it wasn't all the way back to film noir time.
No. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, good counterpoint.
Anyway, I think if this had been in black and white, I probably would have enjoyed it visually, but it might have taken me out of the story or confused me.
I don't know. I'm also playing out the high school thing a little bit. So you brought up a good example, which was Leonardo DiCaprio, Romeo and Juliet. And then there's also the 10 Things I Hate About You, which is a remake of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew. And it's set in modern times, modern high school times.
I haven't seen it.
It's a fun one, you know. I'm not sure that they kept the Shakespearean language. I think that they reset the language to be modern. Color, you know.
I think this would have been okay in color, but I appreciated it. I mean, it would have been okay in black and white, but I think it's better that it's in color, because that contrast between the dialogue and the style and the color kind of made it for me.
I think it would have gone pretentious.
Yeah.
In black and white.
Right.
Because it's pulling it too much where it is.
Right. That's it. Pretentious.
Yeah. Okay. How about all the shots on the football field?
You're good.
There's a lot of stuff on that football field. You know?
Oh, yes.
I was surprised it was more on the football field than in the parking lot. I mean, there was some in the parking lot, but to me, the parking lot is the place where the action happens in high school. Mm-hmm.
No, the football field behind the league.
You belong to an urban high school. You don't belong to a suburban high school, man.
Yeah, that's a suburban.
They are at suburban, but I'm saying Mark teaches at an urban high school where there's, in contrast to a suburban high school where there's a lot of stuff that goes on at the, in the parking lot.
Mm.
A lot of drama in the parking lot. Mm.
They did have a lot of fighting
A lot of challenges, a lot of standoff in the car, you know.
Well, the things did happen.
Yeah.
In the park, like that big fight.
Yeah.
That was a good fight.
There was a lot of fights.
They almost ran him down in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Well, he got beat up so much in this movie.
I was amazed that he
walked into that. I mean, the blows sounded like an elephant couldn't get up.
I know.
Well, it was kind of a good thing they had him kind of sick at the end where he couldn't kind of stand up after all those beatings.
Well, he was broken inside.
Yeah.
I wonder how Mary would like this film. And this is kind of like Mary would either hate it or
love it.
Yeah.
She liked it. She sent an email. She said, "I went to St. Brooke and I really liked it."
Oh yeah, she said something. She said something like,
"I liked it, but she didn't know what to say about it."
I'm sure she wouldn't be at a loss for words if we were all together. So I think we're giving it a thumbs up.
Yes.
We would recommend it to our friends.
Some friends.
Okay.
I must say, Fatima had trouble following, as you said, following the dialogue.
Yeah.
I had trouble. You had to get into the rhythm of the film.
Yeah,
you had to, or else it just too much went by.
But you know why I'm saying it?
For sure. Her English isn't that strong.
Yeah, right.
Sure. No, I think I would be surprised if she couldn't follow it. I think every English native speaker has trouble following, even those of us who are relatively familiar with film noir. It's all highly jargonated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not anybody's contemporary jargon. If it ever was anything. Say it again. Yes, very fast.
What? Oh, yeah.
Very, very fast speech and very narrow, kind of dialect for people, for anybody. It was never everybody's way of speaking.
Right.
It was always the argot of an underworld class.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the scenes were very short, too. The tempo of the whole thing.
I love the character of the Brainiac guy, though, who was keeping his eye.
His specs on.
Just keeping his specs on. I can't remember what we called him. Was he Brian? And
the
we
brain,
called him Brain.
The Brain. So.
But I think his real name was Brian. We called him Brain. And he knew everything, right? Well, I don't know for sure, but if I had to guess.
The lockers are really important.
Yeah.
Right. And the notes.
The
same
thing.
The lockers.
Right, the locker and the phone booth, right?
The locker is a place where our gang investigator, Dean, goes to after he interviews the student, the locker, to look for things.
At my daughter's high school, they did not allow anybody to have lockers. They got rid of all the lockers
Yeah. And the brick is in the locker.
And the brick ends up in the locker. Well, that was convenient.
Did you guys catch that the ex-girlfriend was carrying the hero's child?
Yes.
Yeah. But that came out like
in pieces.
What do you call the action of the girl when she finally tells him? It's like a slap, not a slap, it's worse than a slap, it's a
twist
of the knife to the hero, to our hero, right?
So it had to be. Say again. She said, well, if you count backwards, it was 3 months.
More than three months,
she was pregnant.
And that's when they were going together.
That was before you broke up with her, or if she broke up with you, whatever. So it was actually your baby. She didn't say it quite that cleanly.
But before that, that, when he lays it all out to Roll and says, "You're the one who brought her to her death."
Yeah.
And then he says, "Well, there's a couple things you missed." And then she adds on a couple things. Can anybody explain to me what she added on?
I don't know. She said she was going to take her to have an abortion the next day.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
And what did she whisper?
What did she whisper to him?
Well, I think that's something we can talk about and wonder about for the rest of our lives. as I'm sure Brain will.
Say again, Lenore.
Lenore?
Yeah.
What did you say?
We were talking on top of you.
Oh, sorry. What was that one, not Tokyo time, what the heck was that one with the older guy and the younger woman in Tokyo and...
Bill Murray and
Lost in Translation.
Oh, Lost in Translation, that one?
Yeah, remember at the end of the film she goes and whispers something in his ear?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
kind of
like that.
Keep you guessing.
Right.
At the end of the film, the girl whispers into his ear.
But we never know what that is.
And then they walk away.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
In this film, it was okay. It worked.
It was annoying in the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I
don't
like it at this one because I'm the brainiac guy.
So, just to have things clear, she organized that the men involved, or the people involved, would all be against each other, and who killed the girl?
The muscle-bound guy.
And he killed her because...
She kills people.
No, he was mad at her because I think she was going to break up with him.
Yeah, because she was sleeping with just about three or four people, wasn't she?
And she wasn't true to him, and he doesn't have very good impulse control.
Obviously.
Almost everything would set him off. He was on drugs a lot.
Because one thing that I felt was that all the complications happened, but I didn't quite get the purpose of every complication.
Except to cover up the killing
of the girl.
No, before that it was about the drugs. Right? They brought in a lot of drugs, and I think the story was he was going to get out of the business with this big drug sale. But he had too many drugs, and he couldn't pass them all off on the high school kids. So he moved them through where? With some professional sports team or something? Was that...
This is our hero?
No, not our hero.
The guy with the cane.
The guy with the cane, and he got his hench people to move them through some sports team in San Pedro or Long Beach or something, and except that they kept back two bricks. One of them was the one that got cut with the bad stuff, and the one guy got, tried a dose and was gifted a dose, and he was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she was involved in that.
She did it, didn't she?
We think she did it. Either she cut it or she helped promote it.
Well, she was probably the most manipulative of the bunch.
Right.
She manipulated everybody.
Right, and she was the rich kid who needed amusement.
Mm-hmm.
This is the usual way, right? The rich kid needs amusement, so she stimulates some kind of conflict.
Well, she was kind of with the one guy until he beat up the other guy, and after he beat up the other guy, then she kind of wanted to be with him.
Wouldn't you?
I'm over the high school thing. Film noir or whatever.
He was a hero. He was a hero.
She was the righteous. Righteous.
What?
She may have stolen the brick, but then she put it back. Right?
Something like that.
I thought she was setting all those guys against each other to cover up her trap.
Yeah.
Probably you're right. I'm not remembering all the details.
There was something in the end about that somebody removed the brick in order to start the view that happened. And the hero, somehow he was opening the trunk and he found that the brick was missing. What did he put in the trunk?
He put the dead body.
Okay.
And then he made the brick appear in somebody else's locker.
Okay, so he took the brick.
I believe he took the brick.
Well, I think he was a step ahead of her. He figured out what she was willing. So then he was a step ahead of her by what he did.
Right.
Yeah.
And the assistant principal.
Mr. Truman.
She didn't think he was going to go to that last meeting. And he pretended he didn't go. And
right, she urged him not to go.
Uh-huh.
And he pretended not to have gone. And then he was trying to keep everybody calm. And, you know.
I think she was just hoping they'd shoot everybody up and everything at that last.
It would be so exciting.
Yeah. And then she covers her tracks by everybody doing
it. For sure.
That. Yeah.
Everybody's dead.
And blaming each other if anybody lived.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that scene where the hero yells at the vice principal for coming into the classroom and looking for him.
Right.
One of my favorite scenes was with the thug in the parking lot when he comes zooming by him in the car.
And he just stands
there. I just thought that was so well done.
Uh-huh.
But what about when he's coming toward him? He's walking. He looks like a... Just before.
Yeah.
Before he gets in the car. When he's walking. That walk.
The waddle. The muscle-bound walk.
Yes.
Right. We're doing gestures now. You can imagine. You can do them at home.
We'll have a video camera.
Transmitter. That's right. We'll do the webcast first.
Webcast. Next time, maybe.
I don't think I can take a picture while we're on the phone.
I think we're done.
All right. All right, we're stopping.